presentations, water cooler chats, groupthink meetings to kick up thought showers. Office life can be dull. Learn what's happening in nature and on the farm every week with Mairead Lavery from the Farmer's Journal. Mairead Lavery from the Farmer's Journal joins us once again. Mairead, good afternoon to
you. Good afternoon. Actually, there's loads of cookery books with absolutely tons of recipes on gluten-free.
Oh, there are.
And all that area. Shereen Allen has one of them. Yeah, I suppose it is, you know, when you get so used to kind of what's out there. But at least I think there's an awful lot more choice now than there was 10 or 15 years ago for people.
Oh, yeah. Do you know last week you mentioned the birth of quintuplets?
Yes. They went viral after it.
We got a letter in just today from Monica, and it was a letter. It was a handwritten letter that she'd written in fountain pen. And she's lovely handwriting as well, I must say. If you're listening to Monica, congratulations. She's obviously been doing a bit of research anyway, but she says she was studying the annals of Ulster for a product she's involved in, and she came across an entry for the year 656 AD, and it was a report on a cow that gave birth to four calves.
Well, do you know what? Tom Clare's calves were probably the next lot at the rate of odds of 180 million to one.
Yeah.
You know, it was extraordinary. But his excitement, I was watching him on the telly there the other night, and, you know, he was just so excited about it. But it was such an extraordinary event.
I think
and
probably,
that they were all healthy and well. I mean, that's what really, as the fella said, bet banner, you know.
Yeah, to happen twice in Ireland, I wonder what the odds on that would be. Any mathematicians can let us know.
Over 1300 years, I wouldn't think it'd be too strong. Yes. You know?
All right, are you just back from the Wexford Food Summit?
I am. I'm after hot-tailing it all the way from New Ross up to here. And I was down this morning. I was speaking at the Wexford Food Summit, which is organised by the Wexford Food Family. So what's that and what's it all about? You know, there's so many food businesses out there now. You just wouldn't believe the numbers. And, you know, they're working away maybe in small units or in their own kitchens or, you know, the opportunity then for to get together, to talk to each other, to get a bit of mentoring, to tell their story, because there is nothing better than show and tell, show and tell. People will listen to the experiences of others in their own sector far quicker than listen to a bunch of experts talking down to them. And so the Wexford Food Family, they have 46 members and they have 32 official supporters. And the official supporters are not a bit like a football club now at all. They're basically the cafes and the restaurants and hotels that stock the products of their members. And they reckon, they've done a bit of analysis on this, and they reckon that their members' business is worth 1.2 billion euro. So not insignificant. Mm. So it's in its kind of small stages, opening stages, but they've big plans. And, you know, the mood this morning was very good. And they got a very good message too, especially now from Bord Bia, because Bord Bia is doing a lot of research into what consumers' attitude is to local food. So, you know, is there too much chocolate out there? Is there kind of too many carrots from the one area? Too many kind of sets of bakeries? Or is there not enough at all? And it was interesting because when people were unprompted to ask, to describe like what was local, it was really local. It was within kind of the next village. And even, you know, with when they were given different prompts, local produce is not something that's made kind of, you know, 100 miles away.
Mm.
It is made absolutely very locally. And what do they associate? And this is where the really good message for people who are thinking about establishing a business is that what people associate with local proximity is that it's locally produced, that it has a story, that they'll meet the people, they'll meet them at the market, the farmer's market, they'll meet them at tastings in the supermarket. So it has a story, that it's not mass produced and that it's better for me. So they're the kind of things that register when people talk about local. And that was, you know, and it was interesting as well that the farmers markets in the past might have been seen, now there's some people say they were very expensive or they were more expensive, but often people went along to kind of bulk buy, you know, potatoes or, you know, carrots with their, you know, green on and still, you know, clay on them. Although, do you know what? I've washed enough spuds and carrots in my time. I'm inclined to go for the clean ones. But actually nowadays, it's a much more kind of, you know, if you're talking about the pre-family age group, you know, where food matters, where they like being about to find the newest jam or the
pesto. And they have the time to do that.
And they have the time, and they have a bit more money than they had maybe a few years ago. And then the over 55s as well, interested in the food story and interested in and not just buying it for their own home, but actually buying it for gifts as well. And all of that kind of was really, really positive for the people that were listening there today.
Yeah, well, actually, because it often strikes me, you know when you go to France and in every one horse village in France, there's a bakery. Now, that wouldn't be commercially viable unless there were planning laws surrounding that kind of thing to make it viable.
Yeah, well,
people appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I always go back, and it's an example I've used so many times. Down home, Shanna Golden, over in the next village, Ballyhahal, which is like just a little street with one shop. It's not even a street, it's just a row of houses with one shop and a primary school and a church. There's a family there called the Carneys, and the dad is a dairy farmer and working DSB. Mum was a great singer, and the three girls went to Calbrough Street here in Dublin to do kind of bakery, cookery, that sort of stuff. And they set up a bakery. It must be 28 years ago or 29 years ago. And what they only cooked was their mother's recipes. So they did scones, and they did brown bread and white bread and bran bread and apple and rhubarb tart and porter cake and Madeira cake and little Bakewell tarts. And really what most households in the country would have been able to put on the table. And the great thing about it is you could always pass it off as your own because it was genuinely homemade. But they built their bakery in the shape of a dormer bungalow, but didn't put in the internal walls. So if the business didn't work,
they could have sold the house. Oh, right.
And that business, you know, has been hugely successful. But they have been successful to the stage that they want to be. It hasn't been about going in to every supermarket in Ireland or every county of Ireland. It's actually about being in maybe 20, 30 square miles of where they're located, where they can get out deliveries every day to. And also where they can source people to work in the business, you know, from the local area as well. And, you know, today now we had one of the speakers was Barbara Sutton from the Bakehouse, and they're employing 15 people in Wexford. And it's a business that's 70 year old. And for a bakery business to have survived that long, it tells an awful lot about the quality of the produce that's coming out of it, because an awful lot of bakeries in Ireland went under in the 70s and 80s and indeed the 90s when the supermarkets really got into rural towns and closed down the local bakeries, basically, because bread was used as a loss leader. So so to get the stories of the people, you know, there was a girl there, Lee Kelly, and she set up these Zaera artisan chocolates, and she, you know, more artisan chocolates. But like, she told a wonderful story of getting started, you know, the 22nd of December, when she got an order double that she expected, and they had to dig in and get it out because it was gifts for Christmas, putting herself up for the Great Taste Awards in the UK and being so nervous about when the result came out, and she got a gold medal, and what getting that gold medal meant to her. And, you know, you could feel nearly everybody in the room saying, do you know, I could do that too. We can. Our sausages are as good. Our rashers are as good. You know, what we're doing is just as good. You know, maybe we can do this too. And she was able to describe then exactly what had happened since getting that award, how it opened the doors for her in so many businesses outside of Wexford, in Dublin, in terms of wine merchants and different restaurants, who, because she had a gold Great Taste Award, that mattered.
Yeah.
So these events around the country, you know, there's fantastic work happening all around the country in terms of artisan food.
Can I read a text here from Sinead, who's in Kerry? She says, there should be a farmers cooperative in every town with local produce. Yeah. There are very few organic produce grown in rural Kerry, but a lot of it is brought in from abroad. A tax incentive would encourage more quality local produce, assuming CETA isn't passed.
Yeah, well, at the minute, the government is out of money for anything, especially for organic farming. You know, it's only going to be the next programme that will come through. And I think, you know, one of the things we forget in this country, we're all the time talking about foreign direct investment and big companies coming in and landing down in your town and employing 500 people. The odds of that happening are fairly slim. And I mean, if you're going to sit and wait for it, you're going to grow old kind of very fast. I think I heard figures on one of a radio programme there during at the weekend that 98.9% of all enterprises in the country employ less than 50 people.
Yeah.
And that they also account for 65% of the jobs in the country.
A fact now, we often forget.
So it's the ones and twos and threes and four employees business and the five employees business. And, you know, a chocolate business that goes from employing five or eight people up to 13 or 14 people. Mm. They are the absolute heroes of the country, because what they're faced with in terms of, you know, food safety legislation, local authority legislation, rates, all the rest of it, you know, VAT, the, you know, returns to the revenue commissioners, and get their business up and going and keep it going through, you know, the trouble that we've had for the last 10 years. So we don't give those businesses, they don't get the same shout, in my opinion, and they're providing 65% of the jobs that are out there. So this was a great get-together for them this morning down in the Brandon House Hotel. And there was a nice turnout and, good luck to them. And, I supporting those businesses. And it was interesting. People expect vegetables, meat and bakery to be very much local products. And they also... There's three ways they buy. They buy out of concern. So you've got the people who are interested in road miles and, you know, all of this sort of stuff and the planet and conservation. Then you've also got people who buy for comfort. So, you know, the brand, maybe they're living in Wexford and they've moved up to Laois, and all of a sudden something like Wexford Preserves are now sold in Laois, and they say, ah, I always loved this. So it's that emotional connection that you get, and you buy it for that. And then there's the people, the rational people, who say basically if it meets the price criteria and fits the product, that's what we get. Yeah. So it's just all of these different people going in and purchasing what is local product. So given what Borbia said this morning, it seems to have a bright future, no doubt about it.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. And very briefly, hedge cutting is stopping today.
Hedge cutting stopping today, yeah. And there's legislation sitting that they've kind of discussed, and they haven't got any further with it to see if there's any exemptions they can give. Now, okay, the county council can change the rules if there's road safety involved, but farmers are looking to see if there's a pilot, can, you know, to maybe change the dates a bit. But as of today, the nesting is starting, and no more hedge cutting or maintenance or burning actually of anything off of hedges either, for that matter. And just before I forget it then as well, talking about that whole, you know, rural Ireland stuff and all these potential businesses that are there, this national framework planning thing is on a roadshow around the country at the moment. I was down in Waterford on Monday at it, and you know, we have at the minute, I think, is it Dublin has 45% of the population and 50% of the output of the country. And we're expecting another million people in the next 20 years. And if we don't do anything, three quarters of that is going to come to Dublin. And you might say grand, but you're going to have people commuting for 3 and 4 hours a day. You're going to have put the price of housing out of reach of people. Yeah. And it's just, so the need for the southern cities, I'm talking about Sligo, Galway, Limerick, Cork, Waterford, right up along that whole area, to basically try and do that counterbalance has never been more relevant. So anybody with an interest in this, the submissions close on the 16th of March, Thursday the 16th of March. So if you're involved in a body or an action group, or if you're involved in anything like this, get your submissions in on this whole plan for Ireland.
All right, good stuff. And Anne just texted in to say today is National Pig Day in the US. Don't be tempting me to make jokes about people I'm not allowed mention.
Tune in every Wednesday from 2:45 to learn more about farming life on Moncrief.